Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Shabbat HaGadol. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Shabbat HaGadol. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week we read Parshat Metzorah, dealing with issues of tzara'at, leprosy. But our real attention is going to be directed towards the special status of this Shabbat, whereby it's known as Shabbat HaGadol, the Great Sabbath. This is the title given to the Shabbat, which precedes Pesach, which precedes Passover. And it's given this name because of the line in the reading from the prophets, the Haftarah, Hinei Anochi Sholeach Lachem et Eliyah HaNavi, Lifnei Boyom Hashem HaGadol Mahanura. Behold, I am sending to you Elijah the prophet before the arrival of the day of the Lord, that great and fearful day. Here we see that somehow Elijah is sent by God in advance of a judgment day of sorts. But for our purposes, what we're going to examine this phrase by unpacking a very, very condensed moment which takes place around our Seder table. It is a moment which is full of symbolism, and I'm going to try and describe it right now. In our Seder, we tell the story of the Exodus, and then we move on to the meal. We begin our meal by eating the matzah and eating the maror, and then we proceed with the meal, eat the afikoman, and we say Birchat HaMazon, the grace after meals. After the meal, we're going to say Hallel, praise of God, sing songs in praise of God. But in a short moment, it's immediately following the meal, we fill up a cup for Eliyahu HaNavi, the cup of Elijah, and we open the door. We open the door of our homes, and we recite some lines which sound quite vengeful. I think for some people, they find them difficult to say. And the lines go like this. Shfoch chamatcha al hagoyim asher lo yida'ucha. Pour out thy wrath, we say to God, upon the nations that do not acknowledge you. Va'al mamlachot asher b'shimcha lo karau. And on kingdoms who do not call in your name. Ki achal et Yaakov vet navehu heishamu. For they have devoured Jacob and laid waste his habitation. Shefoch alehem zam chav acharon apchai sigeim. Pour out your indignation upon them and let the wrath of your anger overtake them, etc., etc. I want to summarize. This moment has three elements. Element number one, the filling of the cup for Elijah. Element number two, opening the door. Element number three, to recite these lines, pour out thy wrath against the nations. What is happening in this moment? What does this moment symbolize? And maybe let me add that I think for many of us modern people who live very peacefully around our non-Jewish neighbors and who are very thankful that we live in a very tolerant world in which Jews are able to live in peace amongst our neighbors, these lines cause a certain amount of embarrassment, I would even say. I read in a couple of Haggadot, one the Shechter Haggadah, the Hartman Haggadah, where they actually print underneath this paragraph another paragraph which is found from a Haggadah printed in Worms in 1521. Pour out your love on the nations who do know you and on kingdoms who do call in your name, for the good which they do to the seed of Jacob, and they shield your people, Israel, from their enemies. In other words, the compilers of those particular Haggadot could not bear to see a statement hanging there which condemns Gentile nations, non-Jewish nations, when we live in such fortunate times. And they felt that we just couldn't retain the traditional Haggadah without a statement about our wonderful, tolerant environment in which we live. But I want to go back to tradition and think to ourselves, how do these three elements, Elijah's cup, the opening of the door, and pour out thy wrath over the nations, how does all this come together at this moment immediately after the meal? So let's move to some answers. The moment at the end of the meal is quite an auspicious time in the night. And let me explain why. According to the halakha, according to Jewish law, one is meant to eat the afikoman. One is meant to, and after the afikoman, one is not allowed to eat anything more. One has to eat the afikoman, the final piece of matzah, by midnight. In fact, this is reminiscent, or this reflects the tradition, the halakha, the law, that one was not allowed to eat the paschal lamb after midnight. It had to be completely consumed without even breaking one of its bones by the midnight hour. And, let me add, one was not allowed to consume any other food after one had eaten the paschal lamb. The idea was that the taste should linger in our mouths, and this should be the focus of the evening, and not that we should move on to after-dinner entertainment, etc., etc. And therefore, in a traditional Seder, since we don't have a paschal lamb anymore, we're not in Jerusalem and we don't have a temple, we eat matzah, which is called the afikoman, to replace that the Korban Pesach, the paschal sacrifice, and then immediately after this, we say grace after meals. So this is all happening around midnight, because usually the Seder goes on for quite a while, and so does the meal. And certainly if my Seder is anything to go by, somebody's sitting there watching the time and says, come on, we've got to finish the meal quickly because we have to eat the afikoman by midnight. Some years ago, I heard a very beautiful reflection on this particular moment in time, because the Talmud tells us that in ancient times, when they did eat the paschal lamb, they all had to eat it in the streets of Jerusalem. They had to eat it within the old city, or the city confines of Jerusalem. And one imagines it was very, very crowded, because you had to fit many tens of thousands, if not millions of people in there. The Talmud says that as they finished their meals, some of the people, I assume they couldn't light fire to roast the lamb up on the roofs, but people would move out of the streets and the city squares and would go up to the roof. And what would they do on the roof? They would sing Hallel. They would sing Psalms of praise to God, which is the next thing in the Seder. So here's the reflection. Imagine we get the time is 11:30, 11:45. As we get close to midnight, everybody's wrapping up their meal. As we get very close to midnight, everybody is saying grace after meals in their various different groups. And as midnight approaches, everybody's sort of finishing up and saying grace after meals. And then at, 5 minutes past midnight, 10 minutes past midnight, nobody's allowed to eat anymore. They've all finished with their food. What happens in Jerusalem? The whole city bursts into song, because now we've hit the part of the Haggadah in which we sing songs, we say Hallel, and we sing. Now, why is this significant? It's significant on the night of Pesach, because the midnight hour is the moment of our freedom. It was at midnight that the firstborn were killed, and the Jewish people were freed. The midnight hour is that moment, literally the moment, in which we became a free nation, which we stopped being slaves, and we were given our freedom. And therefore, how appropriate that at that midnight hour, you know, everybody's in a state of transition, and 5 minutes, 10 minutes past midnight, the city bursts into song. I can only imagine that the noise must have been quite tremendous. And maybe, you know, this state of things in which all of Israel is together in Jerusalem, engaging in our rituals of the Paschal Lamb. We're all there as a nation together in our homeland, in our city. This really is the ideal state of things. So now, let's understand what we're doing around our Seder table. We've just had our meal, and instead of a succulent piece of lamb, not that the culinary thing is the central thing, but instead of lamb, which is actually part of a sacrifice, something that we can actually use to pay homage to God, we replace it with the afikoman, another dry piece of matzah, I'm afraid. Usually after the meal, you don't even have much of an appetite for that piece of matzah. And then you say grace after meals, and then you open the door and fill Elijah's cup. So what is this moment? I think it's a moment of great dislocation. I think it's a scene of great disappointment, because as we sit, wherever we might be, whether we're in Sydney, Australia, or in Seattle, whether we're in London or Los Angeles, whether we're in Paris or who knows, we are dispersed around the globe. We have no temple. Even in Israel, where we are thankfully in our land, we don't have a state of perfection in our nation. And we cast our minds back to times gone by when, in our historical memory, things were more perfect and more together. And we have a sense of disappointment. Things are not as they're meant to be. And this midnight hour, which in Egypt was a moment of redemption, suddenly becomes a moment of yearning for redemption. It becomes a moment of yearning that the wrongs of history get put right. That once again, we are in exile. Pesach, which should be a night of freedom, a night of redemption, we are still sitting in an unredeemed state. And this midnight hour where we should be singing all together in Jerusalem sort of highlights this moment in which we really perceive, and it's almost palpable, the state of our galut, the state of our unredeemed selves. And that is why we in fact fill up a cup for Elijah. We are recalling this verse in Malachi. Hinei anochi sholeach lachem et Eliyahu Navi lifnei bo yom Hashem hagadol v'hanora, that Elijah will be the herald of the Messiah, that Eliyahu Navi will come in order to prepare the Jewish people so that they will be able to transition to the Messianic age, to an era in which there is greater justice, in an era in which there is pride to the Jewish people, an era of peace, an era in which Jewish priorities are restored. So here we understand that at this midnight moment, we open the door, and it's interesting, because some years ago, I had a student, and he went to a teacher of mine for the Seder. This teacher is a rather creative and unconventional teacher. And I asked my student, I said, you've got to watch very carefully what he does and report back to me, because I really want to know what he does, which is unusual. He came to me for lunch the next day, and I said, you've got to tell me what the rabbi did, which was strange. He said, very little. He really didn't do anything out of the ordinary. It was a regular Seder. I said, well, so what was the little? He said, well, when they open the door at the time of Elijah's cup, we always have the tradition that Elijah comes in. In fact, my dad always makes the joke that some of the wine has gone down. But this rabbi came down with a pair of hiking boots and a backpack full of water. And when he opened the door, he said, we're not waiting for Elijah to go in. We're actually going out into the street hoping that Elijah will be walking around to redeem us. And if he should redeem us this year, I'm ready to march to Jerusalem. I've got my hiking boots on. I have water for the journey, and I'm ready to hike to Jerusalem. Maybe we open the door in order to see whether Elijah is walking the streets, whether, just like in Egypt, all those thousands of years ago, in which the streets became the place in which we were redeemed, and we could go out of our houses and walk to our freedom, similarly this year. So we've explained Elijah's cup, and we've explained the opening of the door. We want to see what's going on outside. If we're inside, maybe we won't even see the Messiah come. But I want to deal with yet another, something which, the third element, which maybe is the more disturbing element, and that is the idea of Shefach Chamatcha, the few lines that we say, pour out thy wrath upon the nations. And this really did bother me for a long time. Why are we saying what almost seemed like spiteful, hateful lines at this point? But then I decided to do a little bit of research. It wasn't difficult to do. I looked up the source. And the source comes from Psalm 79, Tehillim Perek Ayin Tet. And I'll just read a few lines from that psalm. Mizmor la'Asaf, a song of Asaf. Elohim ba'u goyim lachalatecha, timu etechal kodshecha, samu et Yerushalayim le'iyim. O God, the nations have come into your land. They have defied your holy temple. They have laid Jerusalem in ruins. Natlu et nivlat avadecha ma'achal le'of ha'shamayim. The bodies of your servants, probably the priests, are now food for the birds. Basar hasidecha, the flesh of your pious ones, l'chay to'aretz, are being consumed by wild animals. Shafchu damam kamayim sivot Yerushalayim. Their blood, the blood of the priests, of the pious ones, has been spilt around Jerusalem. Ve'ein kover, no one's burying their bodies. Hayinu cherpa l'shcheinenu, we've become a disgrace to all around. Lav v'keles l'svivoteinu. Adma Hashem ten aflanetach. God, how long are you going to be so furious with us? Tivar kamoish kinatecha. How long is your anger going to burn like fire? Shefocha matran hagoyim asher lo yida'ucha. Pour out your anger on the nations who don't know you. V'amla mechod asher b'shimcha lo karav. And on kingdoms who don't call in your name. Ki achal et Yaakov et navei leishamu. Because they're the ones who have eaten Jacob, devoured Jacob, and who have destroyed your temple. When I read this text, I think it's very clear when it was written. It was written when the images of the destruction and the carnage of the destruction of the temple were before our eyes. When there were dead bodies all around Jerusalem, blood running through the streets due to the violence of the destruction of the invasion by the Babylonians who destroyed the temple. And there's a sense of outrage here, of fury on the part of the victims, on the part of the Jewish people who see their temple in flames, their temple destroyed. They turn around to God and says, "Why are we so bad? Pour out your wrath, pour out your anger against the nations who have destroyed your temple." I think this goes back to this moment too. In other words, this midnight moment is the ancient moment in which we were all redeemed, in which the Jewish redemption took place. And since each person is meant to really experience the Exodus as if he was there, when we reach this midnight moment, we're gripped by a sense of disappointment, by a sense that history has been upended, it's in a state of disarray. This should be the moment in which we should be celebrating that all history's trajectory is correct, that the Jewish people should experience redemption, freedom, and should be able to march to the future to fulfill their destiny. And yet, for 2,000 years, Jews have been wandering around the globe. For 2,000 years, the Jews have felt that the history has been, in a sense, dislocated. There's been exile, dispersion, and so many of the traditions cannot be kept. Now, I know that many people listening to this podcast aren't looking forward necessarily to the bringing of the Paschal Lamb in Jerusalem. But I think we can all relate to the sense of disappointment, the sense of a moment unrealized, which is what this moment represents. The sense of disappointment, where we lift up our voices. I can imagine Jews living in far more hostile surroundings, opening the door and having experienced so much anti-Semitism, opening the door and say, "God, why are you causing such misery and hardship and pain to the Jewish people? There are people who are far more unethical than us. We might sometimes sin, but there are people who are really evil. Pour out your wrath on them, not on us." But this goes along with a hope for the future. By the way, again, I stress, this is not a call to arms or a call for Jews to take vengeance. It's a prayer to God. There's no intention that anybody should do anything unethical or violent. It's a prayer to God saying, "God, put the wrongs of history right." And at the same time, we fill up a cup for Elijah saying, "God, you redeemed us in the past. Maybe you will redeem us once again." So this connects our Haftarah Shabbat HaGadol. Pesach looks forward to good things, to big things, to a transition in the state of the Jewish people. And I want to encourage you around your Seder table, not just merely to read the Haggadah, but maybe to raise the question, right? If there was to be a dramatic change in the Jewish people, if what would we want it to be? Where's the next place we need to go? If we're looking, if this is a night of redemption, what redemption do we want to look for? We live in fortunate times. We live in tolerant times. We live in times when Jews have the opportunity of living in the land of Israel. Jews have the opportunity of advancement in society. Jews have the opportunity of attaining a very high Jewish education, both men and women. And so what's the next stage? What redemption should we be praying for this year? What should we be thinking about when we open the door for Elijah, when we go out to meet Elijah, or Elijah comes in to drink our wine? What type of redemption are we looking for this year? And I will leave you with that question, maybe to discuss that around your Seder table. I wish all of you a Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a happy kosher Passover. I hope your Seder or your Sedarim are incredibly meaningful, and that we all experience a Chag Chirut, a festival of freedom, joyously and with meaning. Thank you very much. Shabbat Shalom and Chag Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.